up, George?
Hey, Mike.
How are you, man?
I'm good.
So we're on the Mike Force podcast, and I want to podcast you because I think I have podcasted you before, but
we did one for Fieldcraft when I first started.
Yeah, it was before you were popular, and you were.
I'm not really that popular.
You were kind of lame.
Yeah.
No, during that time you were.
Oh, okay, my bad.
But now you're all popular now.
I got a couple followers.
You have 63.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
And 60 are your family.
I wish I had a friend that like had all these followers. I could like, they could point me to my direction. You know.
You want me to cross promote you?
Yeah, no. No, I do find it cool. Like, do people do follow me and they reach out? But sometimes it's
What are the most often frequent questions you get?
I get a lot of PSYOP questions. A lot of guys reach out and ask me about, hey, I'm reclassing. I'm thinking, you know, civil affairs or PSYOP. And I give them both sides of this of the road there. So, and then they reach back to me like, hey, yeah, I just got my my PSYOP contract. I'm reclassing this day. I'm like, all right, well, let me know. Keep me in touch. Like, you know, keep me informed. Let me know how you do. And some guys hit me up. Some guys just, you know, they just fall off. But
is PSYOPs a popular thing? Like, people want to join PSYOPs? I think it sounds cooler than it really is.
So I think like on paper, it sounds amazing. Like, it's like, wow, I get to like influence and, you know, these foreign governments. I get to go in and like get all these like marketing advertising things or these programs. But man, in reality, it's like we're so handcuffed to our policies and our, like, are we allowed to do this? It's like, can we just say like I had this idea when I was in South Africa. Was we were down in Uganda and we were doing the counter LRA mission. And I'm like, why don't we just do this? We haven't heard from this guy, whatever. Why don't we get someone?
Joseph Kony?
Yeah, Joseph Kony. Yeah. Like, why don't we get someone like from Hollywood, make a fake, like a dummy Joseph Kony, set up a whole like ambush raid thing, like, we got him, you know, and show his dead body on the ground and then see what happens.
But yeah, because people will start hitting.
Yeah.
If the real Joseph Kony was alive, he would stand up and then he would come up on the radar.
Exactly.
Because they're egotistical
like
that.
But we can't, it's like, well, we can't do it. We can't put out false news or something like that. It's like.
Yeah, you can.
Come on,
that's
man.
How we win wars.
We need that like undercover PSYOP to where it's like
clandestine.
UW, yeah, clandestine, not UW PSYOP. But it's just frustrating, man. It really was frustrating to like, because you come up with all these good ideas and it's like, why can't we do this? We should do this. And like, oh no, that's illegal. And it's like, you got to go through like four lawyers just to like approve a voting campaign, you know, like things like that.
It's like a 20 PowerPoint slide presentation to approve one movement.
Yeah, exactly.
So you had a long career in special operations and psychological operations.
Yep. My whole career was in PSYOP.
And you jumped into Afghanistan in 2001.
Yep.
In October.
Yeah, with 3rd Ranger Battalion. We did it was Objective Rhino. And what it was, we were hitting this airfield to, you know, secure it. And the other unit that we were supporting, they were hitting David Rowan raid on Mullah Omar's compound. That came up dry. So we got the call. It was time to go, and then we left and exfilled out. But I mean, at the same time during that operation, it was kind of like a military deception, you know, because we had the jump into southern Afghanistan and the Objective Rhino, and then you had the SF teams up in the north. I think it was they were infilling with the horse soldier stuff, and then you had that same raid that that CAG was doing against for to find Mullah Omar. So, and you know, it was a lot of moving parts going on, so which was kind of cool to be a part of that. But it was so fast, you know what I mean? It was like that one thing that we did, and it was so fast. I wish we would have like stayed there for a while and maybe did like a couple weeks like ops in and out, just seeing what we can find, or you know, doing some, you know, meeting, I don't know, doing something, just going, jumping in, securing, and then leaving. Like, I want to stay, let's live there, you know.
Yeah.
Let's build some rapport with the locals. Let's kill some more bad guys. Let's fuck some shit up, you know? But it didn't happen that way. So we went back to the FOB and sat there until we came back.
How long were you guys in country that first time?
That first time we got in, it was like 3 months. We got in like October, and then we left. I left December 6th. I got back to Bragg, and then 20 days later, I got the call. Like, I think it was like Christmas Eve or something, like the 23rd. They're like, hey, George, you and your other guys is going to go back. So we just, the day after Christmas,
so you're back for 10 days and they're
20
like-
days. And then I went back out with, so we were in there the first time we were with 3rd Ranger Battalion. Then the second time, me and my one guy, we only did two-man teams because of weight on the birds. So I had me and my other guy, and we supported 1st Ranger Battalion. So we went back, and then it was just two guys instead of the whole detachment for the first
back time. To Afghanistan?
Yeah, back to Afghanistan.
What did you guys do then?
We went back to Bagram. We were in...
Kandahar?
No, it was the island off of Oman. Mazar-e-Sharif, that little island there.
Yeah.
So we went back there, and then we stayed like 2 weeks there, and then I was like, can I go forward? Like, I'm no good here. Me and my guy's no good here. So they're like, okay, yeah, no problem. So we got kicked out to Kandahar. We stayed at Kandahar for a little bit, and then I met up with the other PSYOP team that was working with 101st, Staff Sergeant Mike Dickinson at the time. He got killed, I think about a year later in Iraq, which was kind of like the first time like any of my friends got killed.
A PSYOPS guy?
PSYOPS guy, yeah. He got hit. They were doing a left seat, right seat ride, and a sniper hit him, and it went through his neck, and it hit the guy that was replacing him, hit him in his neck. He survived, but Mikey got killed and over there, and it was weird, man, because I was back at Bragg at the time, and I'm running into Matamile, and the Matamile was this like fucking sandy trail and behind where we worked, and it was just...
That. Yeah,
and I was back there, and I turned a corner, and I saw one of my friends. He was like, "Hey, George, come here real quick." And I was running. I said, "What's up, man?" He said, "Did you hear what happened?" I was like, "No." He said, "Mikey got hit in the neck. He died." I was like, "Holy shit, man!" Like it was like the first time like someone I knew like
in
personally
war.
Hit me. Like I was like,
and "This wow. is still 01."
Yeah, this was early on, and I was like, "Damn!" Because I mean, just like a year or two later, before that. We was in Afghanistan. He took me on one of his missions with him. He was like, because I wasn't getting any, nothing was spinning up for us. So he's like, "Hey, just come out with us, man." And we went out to these villages, met all these people, did all this stuff, and brought back some intel that we didn't have on our end, and it worked out pretty well. I mean, but yeah, my second trip was kind of, I really had to get in where I fit in because I was basically a brand new sergeant, man, like E5. I'm getting sitting down to, you know, support 1st Ranger Battalion, like,
did you wear your muster stain on your uniform?
No, I don't think I got it. We didn't get that approved until that summer when we got back because they approved it, but then we had to wait because they were going to do like the ceremony thing.
Yeah.
And
did they actually do that ceremony?
Yeah, we did it in Womac. It was weird. And we had.
In Womac.
Yeah, it was Womac. Like they had like a little room where it was like stage and all that
in
stuff.
In a hospital?
Yeah, it was
but
weird.
Why?
And they're like, it was like in this like auditorium they had.
Oh, okay.
And the guy, remember, he became a chaplain, but he was in Black Hawk Down. He was one of the main guys in Black Hawk Down. He was enlisted, but then he got out and became a chaplain. Oh, I forget his name, but he pinned my wings on.
It wasn't Nate Self.
No, I don't think it was. I forget the guy's name, but...
Self was in Anaconda, not
yeah.
Black Hawk Down.
So we did that, and it was cool, but it felt like I didn't want to be that guy that all he based his career on was that jump.
Yeah.
It's like, it's an operation, man. It's an infill technique. I could have did pre-jump and not ever jumped in my life and then jumped out the plane. You know what I mean? Let's just be honest. It wasn't that technical. You need to, you jump out and you land.
Yeah.
And then you get your shit on and you hit the objective.
How many deployments did you do to Afghanistan?
I did four total to Afghanistan. And then I didn't even get a chance to go to Iraq.
That's weird, huh?
Yeah, because what it was is that I was supporting 2nd Ranger behind the time, so they were split. They were had half of the detachment in Afghanistan and half in Iraq. When we got the call to go to Iraq, my detachment sergeant and my detachment commander went to Iraq because they were like, "George, you and your guy are gonna rotate out with the other two guys out there." I was like, "Okay, cool." That never happened. We got stuck at Bragg for another 6 months and just kind of was like, man, I would love to have gone to Iraq, but I had all these other deployments come up and then I left that Ranger detachment and I went to the WESADs. No, did I go to the WESADs next? No, I went to, I was an instructor over at the NCO. No, I was at the WESADs first. It was at
What's that?
So it was called the Wind Supported Aerial Delivery System. It was kind of a UAV with these bins that released leaflets. And what you could do with it as well, it was like a Swiss Army knife. You could do radio broadcast, TV broadcast, loudspeakers, drop whatever you can put in the bins. But It was like the size of half of the size of a Volkswagen Beetle. I mean, it was this huge thing that you launched off the back of a Humvee, and it was just it was like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. You know what I mean? It was just like this contraption that just this huge thing that just float. It was a parafoil system, so it had a parachute on it and a prop on the back, and it just used that to fly. And you know, it was cool because we got to program in flight patterns. We got to use all this cool like software, and it was cool to be like it because you had to do all these like PMCSs. You had to make sure you do it like step by step, or you know, you it wouldn't start. You know what I mean? It was like all these checks, and you had to torque down the propellers just the right so it gets the right turn, and so it's not all wonky in the air. So there was a lot of technical stuff that you had to do before you could even launch. And even during launch, you had two people on each side of the parachute. You had two guys in the vehicle.
I feel like that's a dumb.
Dude, one guy drove. The other guy had to like
it's crazy.
Drop this hoop, then release the hook. And then once it lifted off, and you got to do a certain number. Then another guy had a controller. He had to rev it up and get it in the air. Once
how many of those crashed?
Oh, we crashed it probably like 3 or 4 times. I mean, it was just this thing that once it got in the air, it hit the waypoints. Then when it came back, the landing part was just every time it was like, okay, here we go. And then it
shot in the dark.
Crash. It would like catch and it would just flip. It was just a disaster. But all the pieces though were easy. You take them off and put them on. So, but yeah, that was just 2 years of my life I'll never get back. It was like a brand new detachment. I had to stand it up.
I've done UAV stuff, but more of the smaller packable ones. And one of them called the Wasp. But the thing I recognize with drones is it's like this burden of responsibility.
Yes.
Like, hey, we want you to learn this thing. And if you crash it or you lose it, we're going to end your career. But, yep. You know, here, we need the capability. And they pick guys and you're like, oh my God, this is like handing out a death warrant.
Yo, so it was like the first attachment. Like I was the one like standing it up. And it was like, no offense against the guys I worked with, but man, a majority of them were like the ass and trash of like units that no one wanted.
Oh, that stood up this team.
I had maybe like 3 or 4 solid dudes that I could depend on, but man, the rest of them were just like, what the fuck, man? Like, it's just the easiest job you can have right now.
Yeah, it's so technical. It's
and it like was like, easy. They were just like, just doing regular private shit, not showing up for work, not coming, like just dumb shit, like being bad kids, you know?
Like, yeah, I don't like bad soldiers. What's the most scared you've ever been in your career?
Okay, so we was in Afghanistan. We had a mission, and we were sitting in the talk. And you remember in Bagram, they had like the wood huts.
Yeah,
you had the steps that come down. They're all janky. So the BCO commander was like, "Hey George, go get the we're spinning up. Go get the interpreters." I was like, "All right, let's go." As soon as I stepped off this step, and I twisted my ankle, and it was like that kind where you take a knee because you're about to throw up.
Yeah,
and I was like, "Fuck!" I was like, "I'm not saying anything." I'm not saying nothing.
Yeah, because you wanted to go in the eye.
I can limp this off, you know? So I was like, okay, I limped it off. It was just getting tight in my boot. I was like, all right, I'm good. Get the interpreters. We get ready to go to the airfield, and then we're sitting in the little half shell thing waiting for the birds to show up. They show up, and all right, let's go. And everything was pitch black, and I start walking out, and I guess I'm the only one that hit the pothole on the tarmac, and I twisted my ankle, the same one again, same intensity. And I went down, and my interpreter, his name was Adam. Shout out to Adam, man, if you're still out there. But he was a great guy. He picked me up, like put his arm around me. I was like, all right, George, let's go. We can do this. And I was like.
And he was an Afghan?
Yeah. No, he was like an Afghan, but he was like an American citizen, you know?
Oh, okay.
And then the first sergeant like trotted by me. He was like, you can go back to the hooch if you want to.
And you're like, the blades are turning.
The blades are turning. We're
Chinooks?
Yeah, Chinooks. I'm in the, you know, you get the behind the Chinook and that heat coming off.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
Oh my God, I can't breathe. And that's where I was. And he was like, you can go back if you want. I was like, nope. I said, you're not getting me off this bird. And we get on late, sit down, and the whole time, like I can feel my boot getting tighter and tighter and tighter. I was like, oh God, I can't barely walk right now. I was like, I do not want to jeopardize anybody. You know what I mean? Like that's the right reason why I was scared. I was like, man, I'm going to fuck this up for somebody. It's going to have to drag my ass out. I'm going to get somebody killed. But I just like tightened my boot up a little bit more and I made it back. We where did we go? I forget what fall we went to. We went from Bagram to another place. And when they landed, they landed in this like rocky, like riverbed. And I was like, fuck, great. Now I got to walk through these rocks, uneven rocks. Walked to the rocks, got on the LMTV, no ladder. So when we got to where we had to get off, had to jump off at one leg. And I just like sucked it up, man. And when we got onto the bird to go onto the actual mission, the birds landed 2 miles away from like where we were supposed to land. So I had to walk.
Oh my God. On purpose?
No. I don't know. I think it was an accident or something. And then we walked and walked and walked. And we finally got to the objective. And we hit it and everything. Cleared it all out. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I made it through that. Came back. Took my boot off. We got to the hooches. And it was like purple, yellow, green. Disgusting. Starting to, swell up. But they were like, just get some rest. As soon as I lay down, you hear incoming, we got rocket attack as soon as we got back from the mission. And it was like, oh my God, is this how I'm going out? By a fucking rocket. It hit 100 feet away from us, which was, hit a couple guys, which is unfortunate. But that was that night, man. It was just like it nonstop of just dumb stuff that happened. And but I made it. I'm here today. And,
You survived.
Survived, I look at it as like, I did 20 years and I lived. I'm humble about that. I'm blessed and I'm lucky. And, I'm here to like help, like, tell stories and share my, stuff and share the people I met, like Mike Dickinson, RIP. So things like that, we can share these stories about people that we know and, keep it alive, like how we do these podcasts. I look at it as we're historians, we're collecting these stories and they'll always be there for generations, for their kids and, their loved ones that they can hear them tell their stories and share those. So I think that's pretty cool.
It's cool. What about the cooking thing? Where does that come from?
I've always enjoyed like good food. I mean, obviously, everyone should enjoy good food, but I had this thing where I was like, I want to start doing this shit on my own. Like every time I go to a restaurant, yeah, it's good. But then when you make it yourself, nothing will be better than when you make it yourself. So I did ribs. I was doing ribs one time and they just came out shitty. They were burnt. They were just crispy. They were just overcooked. And I was like, I'm gonna do this the right way. So I went on YouTube, man, like anybody else. And I Googled shit throughout the week. And I was like, this is it. So I went to the commissary. This is in Germany. So they had like the worst rib selection. And then I got home and I was like, I'm going to do this right. And then I just set it up and just experimented. And these ribs came out like,
I noticed when you cook though, we don't really eat. You taste it.
Yeah. I want people to enjoy it. So I want to like watch people enjoy it. And I don't know what it is with me, man, but I get anxiety over the dumbest shit. Like when we did the cook for the resiliency course and I did ribs and everything, I was like,
what was the anxiousness from the unknown? Like
just the unknown.
People were going to judge you for the bad food?
And I wanted to be good because we were cooking for like a lot of like very good, like cool people. And I was like, I want to impress them. I want them to like talk about my food. And
oh, that was a good, you talking about resilience in Montana?
In Montana, yeah.
Oh, that was a huge success.
Yeah.
People loved your food.
So, but I did that. And when it come out like good, it's like, I want to watch people eat it. I don't care if I eat it because I know what it tastes like. But I like watching everybody else eat and just enjoying that and just seeing their face after they take the first bite and then hearing it while I'm like around them. It's just a good feeling that I know that I can make some good food and to make it taste really good. So,
So what's going on with the fam right now? How are you feeling? You happy?
I am happy. I wish that I could, for those that don't know, I had a previous marriage. It didn't work out, but we had two beautiful daughters from there, and I have a 13-year-old and a 7-year-old daughter.
I love your girls.
They're amazing. But they live in Colorado right now with their mom. And it's just, I've gotten used to it, but like being apart from them all the time, it just makes our bond stronger. But man, it does suck. I mean, it gets to me a lot. Like there's times where I just get down and depressed and everything. But then I just call them and on FaceTime them. I can FaceTime them anytime I want and. They're only about, it's only a 4-hour drive. We meet halfway. So I get them, throughout the breaks and throughout the, for the summer. But they're getting ready to move down to Florida, back to St. Augustine area where they were at, which is a lot better for them because they love it down there. They got their friends and everything like that. So
do you miss the girls?
Oh, I miss them every day. Yeah, I miss them every day. I mean, there's just, I wish I could say you know, they're the regular like shitty teenagers and shitty like 7-year-olds with the attitudes. But honestly, man, they are really, really good girls. Like they don't do the drama. They're not bad in school. They're not shitty to their mom. Like they're really good and they help out, which is great. Like if you have kids, that's why you have kids, to help out. You know, once they get a certain age, it's like, hey, clean up, you know, so I don't have to do it. But now I miss them every day, man. It gets hard sometimes, but you know, at the same time, you got to have that right mindset, knowing that, hey, my kids are safe. And I asked them, I say, hey, do you feel safe right now? And they say, yes, of course, Dad, I feel safe. And so as long as they're safe, they're happy, they're doing good in school, there's no more. I mean, I can't complain. I mean, it is what it is. It didn't work out. Oh, well, but I've got a great wife right now. I have a son. He's a little over two. He's a great kid, though. We started him in daycare, and it's funny when you drop him off and they, like the first day, like he gave me a hug and kiss, and then Sarah came over and was like, okay, give mommy a hug and kiss. And he was just like, not having it. He was like, I don't know, mom. He pushed her away and then went into the room. And it's cool because like, when you go to pick him up, you can like stand off and like watch him and through the window, you know, and see how they interact with people. And I picked him up yesterday, and I walk in there, and he's laying on the teacher, kind of like getting ready to pass out. And I walk in and I go, Bobby, hey. And he sees me. As soon as he sees me, he starts crying and runs over to me like, he starts crying with his little boo-boo lip. And he gets, and like I pick him up, and he just puts his head, like glues his head on my shoulder, just holds on to me super tight. And just like, he's just so happy to see me, I think what it is. And that right there is the best feeling. I know he's crying, but I think it's just like a relief of joy that we're back to get him and he's not left there. You know what I mean?
What is it with that? What is that called? It's like separation anxiety.
Yeah. Because he's been with Sarah for the last, 2 years. I mean, every day. And so like getting, like, you know, having to break that routine, he probably just like, what the hell is going on, Dad? But it's good for him, though. He needs to be out there in daycare. And all my other girls went to daycare, and they grew up fine. So I
wonder, I mean, if you're like me, you've been separated for a while now, but I've been separated more than you have.
Yeah.
Do you miss it at all?
No, not at all. Why not? Man. It just wasn't towards the end there. I mean, it was hard, man. It was like putting a Band-Aid on to pulling a Band-Aid off. Putting a Band-Aid on, pulling a Band-Aid off. We'd have good times, and then the bad times were bad. You know, when your wife, makes a choice, or I don't know, whatever it is, but she said she was a lesbian. So right there, I'm okay, marriage over. I mean, there's nothing you can't go back from that. So, but it wasn't bad. There was no like
animosity.
Yeah, I was not going to be that guy. I'm not going to let myself, my character change just because the person I was married to doesn't want to be with me anymore and wants to be with somebody else. I mean, okay, like great.
Did it hurt less because it was a woman?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, big time. If it was a guy, it would have been a lot more intense with stuff like boundaries and lines and like, cause I have daughters. They know another
interesting. Yeah.
It's going to like,
yeah. Not because it was an ego thing with you and the guy, but because of the girls.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was.
But you remain good friends, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, we remain good co-parenting, things like that. Like if anything happens.
So how did that go down?
So it was, you know, to be honest with you, it was a night we went out, and it was like we went out with a big group of people, and it was just a weird, it was already, you can already tell like that it was already done. Like, you know what I mean? It was just like, we were just
checking the block,
man. Like trying, checking the block. And I knew I had some, you know, I was afraid. The only reason why I didn't do it sooner is because I was just got comfortable. You know what I mean? You're married for so long. It's just like, okay, we're just having a bad time.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Like another bad time. Okay. We'll get through this.
Well, also when you're in the military, which both of you guys were, it's, you don't have enough time to deal with things.
No.
Because you're deploying, you're downrange, and it's convenient when you have somebody there to take care of business.
Yeah. Oh, no, 100%.
If you don't need the emotional support, then they're just handling stuff.
So the night progressed, and it was time to go, and came back home, and I went inside, and all of a sudden, she wasn't coming inside. I was like, what's going on? So I go outside, and she's out there with her wife right now. And I was like, are you kidding me right now? And I was like, you got to go. You know what I mean? Like it just,
what do you mean? She was at the house?
Yeah, she's outside. Just hanging out. Just talking. Yeah, and then I came outside. I was like, what are y'all? Oh, okay, I see. And I came in.
What
I was
do you
like,
mean?
Like they
mean?
Were, what I think they were like making out or something.
Oh, yeah, what do you mean you think?
I don't know, man. It was just weird. Come on,
let's talk about it.
It was weird.
So they were making out.
Yeah, and I was like, fuck. I said,
you didn't get mad? I mean, you were
upset. I mean, I got upset, but it was like 1 a.m, 2 a.m, and I'm like,
you're like, I got to sleep.
Yeah, I was like, fuck. I was like, here's your keys. You can go. You know what I mean? You got to go. You can't be here right now. Like, I can't believe, you know, this happened. I'm like.
But were you kind of.
It was honestly, I was kind of relieved.
Yeah.
You know, it was.
So secretly, you're like, dang.
Yeah. I mean, it was the point where it was just like, we were just roommates.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
how'd that go down after the fact?
After the fact, I mean, I honestly was. It was like a relief, man. Like, I wasn't like, obviously, like, did I get upset? Of course I got upset. Of course I got mad.
You're such a nice guy.
But at the same time, I had to like really sit down and like really come to terms with myself. Like, dude, this is the correct thing that's going on. This is what needs to happen. You're not healthy. You're not happy. You're frustrated. You're depressed because you're not happy. So, you know, we made sure that we didn't keep it like angry. We kept it peaceful.
How did you strike that balance? Was it like, hey, let's have a conversation?
Yeah. So like the next day, the way that I handled like stress and stuff like that, I just went out and did yard work all day. I cut the grass. I was, you know, raking, whatever it was. And she came by and I was like, all right, let's have this talk. And then we just talked about like everything, how we felt and what we, you know, what was going on at the time. So we were like, okay, this is it. Let's, you know, let's get this done as fast as possible. I said, let's keep it out of the court. Like, look, we don't need to go to court. Let's get a lawyer. They'll do it for us. And we hashed it out on ourselves, like on our terms. We weren't going to let the court say, all right, she's getting full custody and you're paying $3,000 a month in child support. Because that would have ruined us both.
Yeah. Like, yeah, especially in North Carolina.
I'd had to go bankrupt because I couldn't afford the house. Like, we were living beyond our means, you know, at that time. And so we just filed the paperwork. I think we paid like $600, $700 total. We didn't do any custody stuff. We didn't do any alimony, any child support. We did our own child support, you know. But we didn't let the courts get involved with it because I didn't really want to, like, could we have gotten, like, ignorant and ugly with it and did a custody battle? Of course, man. But I'm just not, I can't waste my energy like that. I'm not going to do that. So we just got everything taken care of, man. And we was like, I think it happened maybe in April or May. And we had the divorce finalized in June. So got it done real quick and then went on our separate ways and it worked out. We did the kids like every other week. I had the kids for the week. She had the kids for the week and it worked out really well. So yeah. And then I met Sarah and
let's talk about Sarah.
Oh, man, she's that is my home girl. That's my ride or die.
So Sarah grew up on a farm, right?
Yeah. She grew up in Nash County.
4-H.
Yeah. She did 4-H. She grew up on a farm. They raised cattle. They had, I think, some pigs maybe, but I don't think she was like, we didn't do pigs. She said pigs are assholes. Like,
yeah,
ignorant.
She's a good old country girl.
Oh, yeah. She's great, man. I wish I would have known her long, like sooner. You know what I mean? Cause she's so genuine. So just so nice.
Nurse, nurturing.
Yeah. She's a nurse. She's been a nurse for 15 years and she's going back into it now. It's just trying to find the right job for her. And it's like, it's a little difficult right now where she's putting in like 5 or 6 things, but I think either they're looking for younger nurses that they can just like give the shitty hours to, because there's a lot of the hours are just shitty right now for the job she's trying to get.
Oh, did she not get that job?
No, they never called her back. So I don't know what it was, but she didn't want it. Like, she applied for it.
No, the other one. Didn't she do
it? No, she didn't get that. They went with somebody else. They went with a younger nurse, like one that had like less time, I think.
Oh, so
because the hours are just shitty. They weren't. Like,
yeah, she'll find.
Because she wants to be able to, you know, work during the week part time. That's all we need is part time, and then, you know, but like she has like there's calls on the weekends, and then with me traveling now, she's just like, I'm just going to wait. We're going to work this out. But it's just hit or miss right now. It's just waiting now. So
what is it? What is it that you see yourself doing or evolving as a person in the next, I don't know, 3 to 5 years? You know, we always have like professional
plans.
Yeah,
I want to get smarter for the business side of it. I feel like, you know, like you said before, we were talking before, like I got to a point working here and it's just like everything is new from here on out. You know what I mean? Like 6 months ago, it's like everything's going to be brand new to me here on out. And I'm just learning things as I go. And I feel like, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm no value added because it's like I'm not instructing, I'm not like teaching shit. But it's like when you look at it, I want to see myself as like, as long as the company grows, maybe have my own little slice of whatever, like be a figurehead of like a certain section of our of the company, like business or not, like public relations or something like that, something where I'm like talking to people because I really enjoy like just talking to people, getting to know them, things like that, making sure like things are set up and ready to go. I don't know, something like that. I want to be like doing some like public relations for the company.
Public relations?
Yeah.
What you talking about, man?
Well, I mean, I see us expanding into like,
oh, yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah.
Media and this and media. That, you know, but I honestly, man, I think if everything works out with the company, I just want to be, I want my own like little piece, you know what I mean? Like everybody else, you know?
What do you mean?
Like my own little section, I guess, you know?
Your own department?
Yeah.
Mm. What do you think? Would that department be public relations? Maybe. Or media?
Media, something like that. Somewhere where I can help out, creative stuff, setting stuff up.
Oh, what is it? Not public relations, but what is it when you in media, when you're like, I guess that is public relations.
Something like that. But
when you're trying to engage and then build relationships with other things.
Yeah.
You did that as part of your career, right? You had an opportunity outside of the military to work for a news TV station, which actually was a big station, right?
Yeah, I did WREL News or News 5 or 5, whatever they're called.
Remember that girl, something Love? Her last name is Love?
Yeah, she ran track. She was in Terry Sanford. That's how when we met in Libya, you were like, and I told you about.
Did you work with her?
Yeah, I worked with her on the floor.
I saw her at a restaurant once in Raleigh, and I was because uh-huh. like, I had a crush on her.
Yeah.
And I saw her, I was like, hey, you're that? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, and she walked away. She's like, yeah, so peace.
Yeah, but it was interesting, like, because I was like, that was like 2004, I think. So I was in Miller since like 1999.
And that's a long time ago.
And just working with like civilians and stuff like that. It was just a total, like a brand new
world. Did you grow your beard out and stuff?
Oh, yeah. I did a beard. I did a goatee, you know.
Oh, man.
I had fun with it.
What was that girl that Jennifer Love? Was it? I can't remember.
The girl that you dated in high school?
Damn, no, not her. The girl that was the news person.
Oh, damn.
Something Love.
Oh, Linda Lovelace.
Was her
name. Yeah. Blonde.
Yes.
Lady. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, let's get off of her. So when you look at yourself moving forward, and I've just come to the realization, having Danny, who's a consultant, come out here and kind of getting some education from higher level business people. You know, business people, while we were in the military, you know, worrying our lives away, right? Uh-huh. My whole 20s.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, from 17 to 36.
Yep.
All military. So my whole life was committed to service. And now I feel like when I got out, I'm starting from scratch, starting at zero. So I've realized there's a whole bunch of deficiencies in myself and in my abilities, even though we're a pretty successful company. And we're continuing to grow still. It's super crazy that we have so many deficiencies in business.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. Like, yeah, sitting there with Danny that day, like, it's weird because, like when I'm with you and, like, you're talking to somebody, I get so immersed in the conversation where I'm just, like, I'm like a sponge. I'm like, I'm listening to you. Then Danny's talking. I'm like, and Danny's like, yo, I get up at 4:20 every day. I do my yoga. I do my stretching.
Danny's trying to preach to me about finding balance. I'm like, dude, you get up at 4 a.m.
Yeah, I'm like, damn. So like, and I have that, you know, my sleep schedule sucks. Like, it's fucking disgusting.
Oh, what's wrong with your sleep schedule?
I can fall asleep probably, I mean, honestly, 10 seconds. When I lay down and put my head on the pillow, I'm out. Sarah is like, she's so pissed at me because, like, all of a sudden I'll be like mid conversation.
You take one deep breath and you're out.
I take one deep breath, I'm gone, like sawing logs. But then all of a sudden it's like 1 o'clock comes, I may wake up, and I'm like, why? It's like that wide awake, like, I don't know what it is. Something wakes me up, I'm like, oh, shit.
Well, you used to be on Adderall and all this different stuff as medications, and you weaned yourself off of that, and you said, yeah, and I've noticed that you're more consistent. Like, you're not up and then you're down.
Yeah.
You're just consistent.
Yeah.
So I see it's benefit you that way, but I thought that would balance your sleep.
I know.
And it hasn't?
No, it hasn't. So... it just depends, man. It's so weird. Like, I'll be able to sleep until, like, my latest I've been sleeping, latest is like between 5 and 6 in the morning, which is fine. I mean, if I can get up at 6 every day, I'd be perfect. But man, it's like, I back up 2 hours, 3 o'clock, I'll be waking up. Then I'll lay in bed till 3:30. I may fall back asleep. But what it is, I just get up and it's like, I can't stop it, man. The switch turns on. It's like, oh shit. What do I got to get done today? What I got to do today? Let me get on my phone. Let me check my emails. As soon as I get on my phone, that is like the worst mistake, to have that screen in your face at like 3 a.m. And after that, I'm up walking around. I'm not doing anything productive, but that's what I need to get in that mindset. Okay. As soon as you wake up, you know, you're going to be up, you know, your stomach's going to hurt because your anxiety, because you're a fucking weirdo. And then you just got to get
through. What do you think that stems from?
I don't know. I think it is. I put too much pressure on myself, honestly, with this job. And then I don't want to mess up. You know what I mean? So it's just that stupid outside pressure you put on yourself, because I don't want to like do something and mess something up, and then something happens to the company. Like, it's just dumb shit. And I don't know how it gets in my head. But that's one thing I need to work on, is just my mindset of, listen, Mike's not gonna like chew your head off because you didn't like, you forgot to like take the trash out or something. And I get that in my head, like, oh man, oh shit, oh fuck, oh damn, someone's gonna be mad now. And it's like, and then I'd like tell my, then sometimes I can snap out of it and I'm like, it's not that bit serious, George. No one's dead. No one's losing money. Like, we're good.
I wonder if it's like an active or an overactive, thyroid, not thyroid, but endocrine system.
It could be, man.
Right. Cause a lot of the imbalances in special operations guys is because we jump out of airplanes, we do all these different things where we suppress those biological natural mechanisms and kind of condition ourselves that we don't know how to regulate it. It just goes off on its own sometimes.
And I know how we are, man. We're leaning forward. Like, I don't want to wait on people. Like, I want to get this stuff done, and so I can go on to the next thing and the next thing, and having to, like, I mean, I get it. We were both in the military for a very long time, and patience should be one of my strong suits, you know?
Yeah.
But for some reason, now that I've gotten out and there's not an approval process. I don't have to wait on somebody. It's like, you're like, George, get this done today. It's like, oh, Roger, I can do it. But then when I get to a stop and I'm waiting on somebody, like, for the paperwork we're getting ready to do, it's like, I had to wait on the insurance person to get the form, which they got it. Then setting up the EDI account, I'm like, okay, now I have to wait on their team to do the thing. But then they told me, you know, they'll do the thing back and forth with the company I'm working with. So I'm like, okay. But then it's like, we gotta get that paperwork in. And I just put too much pressure on myself over like the littlest task. But
well, you're used to, I think it, in the military, even though it's a longer process, in the execution phase of things, you're in control.
Yeah.
And so you get things done. Well, that's hard for me too, right? If you're dependent on everybody else to get things done and all these different facets that affect you, it's frustrating to see. It's frustrating to be part of, because you're like, let's do it. Like, I'm ready to go now.
Yeah.
And your best benefit and us working together is you need to get ready to go now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's shit in the civilian world, what I realized, because the military is slow. The civilian world is sometimes like slow. Mud water.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, you're not going anywhere anytime soon.
No, it's just so true. And that's where I think our frustrations come at. And, you know, because I want to do the right thing. I want to get this, like, I want to get stuff done so A, I can do other things, and then B, to go home.
Yeah.
You know, I want to go home. I want to chill.
I want to get done, you know?
and get my job done with so I could, yeah. I could focus on what's important.
Yeah, I can fuck around with my family or, you know, even just we can go out and mess around with the goats, you know what I mean? Like midday or something, like little shit like that. I don't need to have these big, long breaks. I don't need to go on vacation to Cabo to find myself. I don't need to go on these hikes for a week to, you know, just give me a little couple days here and there. Let me enjoy, let me relax, and I'll come back. I don't have the time to take this. The time. We don't have time to take time off. You know what I mean? We don't. Too much stuff's going on. It's just. But this, I think this is part of the life where, if you want something, and you want to be able to like take care of your family, like we talked about for generations, dude, you might get the work done now and fuck off later. You know?
Yeah, you have to. Well, civilian life's so different because every single thing you invest. You'll see a return on an investment,
mm-hmm.
unlike the military.
Oh, yeah.
You invest your life and soul,
yeah.
and you hit a dry hole. Everything, nothing happens, right? We did that in Libya for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot different because I realized, yes, civilian life is difficult, but the more you invest in the right places, the more you'll see returns mm-hmm. and you'll reap those benefits and rewards. And the benefit of being in a free country and the luxury of all the freedoms that we have is that you could do that so fast.
Yep.
And you could have this great life if you just get off your ass and do something about it. And a lot of people don't want to do that, man. Mm-mm. People are just fucking lazy. Like we were joking about it before, but this whole idea, like, what were you joking about? It's like, I give my heart and soul.
Yeah.
Dude.
Like,
come on, man.
It's like, when that, you know, sometimes you get in your head. Like, I think we all can agree that we get in our head and it's like, man, I stayed late that night. I did this, I did that. But then in reality, it's like, well, guess what, George? You get a paycheck every fucking month. You're working for fucking Fieldcraft Survival. You get to hang out with your boy every day. You get to hang out with your friends that you enjoy. It's not that hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I really needed the time off, hey, Mike, can I get like half the day off? And me and Sarah are going to hang out. No problem. Be at work at 12, whatever it is. Like, there's no like pressure. I think we put out this undue pressure on ourselves, man, because we want everything to be perfect, we want everything to be right, and we just want everything to be people to like us. You know what I mean? So I just want to get the work done. I want to put the work in, and hopefully it turns out well, and everyone likes it. You know, like today, like me and Danny came in, I put the mats down, set up some chairs. It's like, all right, I did that. You know what I mean? One little thing I did, I'm proud of that because right now we have what. 32 people down there training, learning how to take care of themselves with Tony Blauer.
Yeah.
If my little piece of the pie can support that, more power, you know? That's great, you know?
Why'd you complain when I told you to come in, though?
You know, because it's like, you're always like, but we get it done, you know? I mean, it's just, I don't know why people complain about life sometimes. It's not that bad, man.
Is there anything that you want to accomplish personally or professionally? I mean, is there anything that you wish that you could do as like a bucket list thing?
Oh yeah. No, I do want to, I want to own my own business, whether it's like a hobby farm to where we're,
is that why you're side hustling now and taking all your time and everything that you're doing away from us?
No, that's not even that. No, I'm not. I don't even have time to do it. But no, I want to do something like that, or I want to make stuff with my hands, or do like open a little barbecue stand or something easy. Like, honestly, like all this business stuff going around and like stuff we're learning, like, bro, it's tough, man. It's like, I want to run away every day. You know what I mean? Like, I want to run away and just run to the woods and live there. But it's like, I won't be able to do what I want to do in the future if I don't put the work in now. Like, I want to be done at 50. Done working. I want to spend time with my kids. I want to do some traveling. I want my wife to, you know.
Wait. How old are you now?
I'm 42.
So you got 8 years.
8 years.
To never work again.
Yeah. Or I don't want to use the word never. I want to get to 50 and take a break and reevaluate where I'm at. Maybe, finish my degree up because I've been really super lazy on that.
You going to finish your degree?
I don't know, man.
Need that degree.
That's what I'm saying.
Unless you want it for education.
Yeah. And that's it. It's kind of wanted for education. Just, I don't want to waste it because, you know, I did 20 years in the military. I think I deserve, you know, that college, the GI Bill, whatever it's called now. So I just got to get my ass out and get in there and doing it. So,
yeah. That's super important.
Yeah.
I didn't know the,
the group that we trained this week for breakout went to a Petzl.
Oh, yeah. They did a whole Petzl thing with, knots and harnesses and climbing.
Dude, how awesome of a time did they have?
The night that we went out there, so we did Thursday night was the kind of like they had to run.
Is that the land?
Yep.
Ooh, that land looks beautiful.
We had to run to the border. They had to run to the border. And so me, Addison, Sean Kirkwood, and Nate were in the van. And
We put up the advertisement for another resilience course.
Nice.
So we're going to have to do yurts and
teepees.
Teepees. And finally use the teepees that we want.
Yeah.
What I like about the breakout thing, I was talking about this morning on a live, is it exposes you to new challenges, and that's the way that you build resilience.
Yep.
A lot of people don't realize I think it's as easy as exposure.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to go through a special operations pipeline or go to war
Mm-mm.
in order to make yourself more resilient. You just have to be willing to go out there and be exposed to things that you're not comfortable with. And a lot of people these days aren't comfortable with that.
Mm-mm.
Hey, back to sleep stuff. Because I know I tried. Look, this slumber. What is it called? Slumber.
Oh, yeah. Slumber.
Slumber. What? CBN. Slumber. The Instagram is at slumber CBN.
Yeah.
Charlie Bravo.
November.
November. I was like. Yeah, Charlie Bravo November. So a slumber CBN. I tried some, and it's got cannabinoid things
mm-hmm.
that are similar to like CBD, but it assists in sleep, and it has this, what was it called? Delta.
So there was the one I had, the one I was giving you, there was like slumber has all these different, all different kind of stuff, but they had a pack of gummies and it was the CBN and it had Delta 8 in it. And I think Delta 8 is just a different cannabinoid. I have to do my research. I'm not going to.
How many gummies did you use? come on, man. Do you eat those like gummy bears? You're not supposed to do that.
I had the whole package.
Shut up.
Yeah. I wanted to push the limits.
George,
to see what happened.
You have to be kidding me.
No, I swear to God.
Did you really?
Yeah.
How many are in a package?
10.
Shut up.
Listen, man, I go hard on things.
Listen to me.
I'm not going to lie to you.
Can you OD on cannabinoid?
No, there's no way. There's not one.
Did you get the best night of sleep of your life?
This one. So I.
This is last night.
Yeah. I took.
You ate 10 of the gummies.
Yeah. I'll eat anything.
It's like one gummy a night.
It doesn't work like that for me though. But no, I've
you're not joking either. You took 10.
I'm not joking. I'll eat a whole thing like a pack of gummies in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Like I just want that. I just want to sleep, man. Like knock me out.
What did it knock you out?
Yes, I slept great.
Like the best night of sleep. You don't feel groggy today?
A little groggy because
because you had 10.
I had like I had 10. So.
Oh my gosh. I'm gonna have to edit this. So the stuff that I got, I'm doing it right now is the tincture. What is it called? Tincture.
Yeah, it's like drop. You do like
the droplets.
And they're like, what is it? Like 300.
It's 300 milligrams.
Yeah.
There's a 150 and there's a 300, but it doesn't have the Delta stuff.
No,
right?
It has. I think it's just the CBN. CBN. Yeah.
Is it CBD and CBN?
No, just it depends on what it is. They have so many different things.
Yeah. Well, people have people were like, hey, I would love to take this because my sleep sucks. But I can't take this because I have to do a piss test.
Yeah.
Hemp derived CBD or CBN has no THC in it.
And it has it on the package, it's zero THC.
Yeah, it's zero. Like 0.0000. And maybe there's a one.
Yeah.
But it's like there is no THC. It's because it's not derived from marijuana. It's derived from
hemp.
From hemp, which is just a different strain of plant that has no THC.
So frustrating. Just trying to explain to people.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not psychoactive.
Yeah, it's not psychoactive.
It's for like,
it's
inflammation.
You have cannabinoid receptors in your body that, that manage pain, everything from pain to, anxiety to neurological, whatever. I'm not smart on it. I'm dumb.
It just makes me feel really good. I slept really
well. I'll tell you this. It, out of all the things that I've tried, it, because look, I'm like you, man. I can't sleep.
Uh-uh.
And I get thoughts in my head and then I'm up. If I go to the bathroom at 2:30 in the morning and I think about one thing work related, that's it. And it that pattern, by the way, it didn't happen to me randomly.
Mm-mm.
It's because in special operations, I'd go to bed thinking about a terrorist,
mm-hmm.
somebody we're tracking, knowing that we have to capture this guy And whether it's like the operational stuff, like, hey, I need to make sure I plan. I need to make sure we pack our bags right. I need to get my weapon systems up, my, you know, my frags. Mm-hmm. Or it was me thinking about a way to catch this guy. Those are problems. You know, waking up and then like, oh man, did I feed the goats? Like, that's not a problem. Goats will live.
Yeah.
It's a problem. Hey, did I tell you I signed up for a hunt?
Yes.
Northern Idaho. I can't wait, man. It's going to be epic.
It's going to be 1 week.
1 week, 7 days, right?
I'm going to give it 3 days. You're going to have one. I'm calling it right now. Third day, you're going to back out.
Well, so Mark Wernicke, is it Wernicke, right?
Yeah, I think so.
If I'm mispronouncing that, I'm sorry. He's Pack Goats. Is it Pack Goats on Instagram, Pack Goats, right? Yep. So I got my Pack Goats from him. I got two Pack Goats. I got Frank and Boss. And then I got Ann. Ann is a milking goat. And then I got two packing goats. They won't be old enough for me to use them to go pack. But he's an expert hunting guide, as well as working with one of the best outfitters in the world. And look, people said, well, Mike, why don't you go out and just hunt and, you know, grow some balls? Like, why do you got, you know why?
That's not how it works.
Well, that's not how it works when you run a company. Now I get it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would have to glass, because I'm a hunter. It's not like I don't hunt. I would have to glass these elk for weeks in order to hone in the right area.
Yep.
One, I have to pull a tag for the area, which is part of the outfitters. We already have the tag for the area. Two, I'd have to glass and prep. Mark's going out to do that glass in preparation for me. And then we fill out the paperwork.
Yeah.
And then I show up, and it's not like the guide doesn't hunt for you.
No, everyone's walking the same distance. Everyone's carrying.
I'm taking the shot. I'm harvesting the deer on site.
And you're packing it on the goats.
And I'm packing it out on goats and my back.
Yeah.
So it's not like there's nothing that changes besides the reconnaissance aspect. Yeah. So it's like, I feel like an assaulter where I have a recon element that's going out to do
and
this.
And it's not like you're like hunting whitetail and mule deer is different from elk. They're different intelligence, different. Man. Like,
yeah.
I remember watching that video with Austin. I mean, they were up there and the elk were 500 something yards away. The wind blew the wrong way. They smelled him instantly. And
the whole pack,
and
the whole herd, gone.
You know, you can get away with that whitetail.
You can,
They look around, okay. If you make a noise, they're going to leave. But I can go in the woods anywhere, sit down and find a deer trail and then sit there and wait.
Yeah.
Elk, you're not doing that, man.
Yeah, it's different. It's a different species. You have to be on your A game. And I'm shooting a Dudley's PSC.
Oh, nice.
With a new bow. I'm pulling 80 pounds. What is it? Two Mountain Outdoors.
Yep.
Morgan's shop out in Goldendale, Washington. Man, 80 pounds is a lot of pull.
Yeah.
It's a lot of muzzle velocity. There is a requirement, though. There's outfitter requirements for Northern Idaho for the grain of weight for my arrow, for my broadheads, the quiver. I need to get a quiver.
You going to do like the lighted, the lighted knocks, like the whatever the fucking thing is, where you put it in and when you shoot, the back thing lights up so you can find the arrow or anything like that?
Nah, probably not. But I am using the release, his release, because
what
I try
it
to
with that release. Like, what is the?
Well, there's two types of the release. One is the one where you hook it in, you pull the pressure, and then you tweak the pressure, because once you get your bow drawn out, essentially you're holding it because there's no weight, because it's a compound bow. So it's on pulleys, and so you get to a point where there's like this little window where you need to pull past it, and the pounds that you set in the weight of the trigger release, you pull it, it gets to that point, and then you pull it back a little bit more, and it's going to release off that pounds that you set.
Okay.
So it almost surprises you, right?
Yeah.
I went to Easton's in Salt Lake City and started shooting that bow and getting it dialed in, and it's just not a good setup, man, for me. Because the reason it's not is because intuitively, I know how to prep a trigger and I know how to break a trigger clean.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a sniper. You know, it's like what I did for a living. So I'm an expert at prepping the trigger and then releasing the trigger when necessary. And so that intuition for me made me go back to a normal release where I have it and it's manual.
Yeah.
And then I thumb release it when I'm ready to send it. We're an hour into this thing, man.
Damn, look at us.
George Bell.
You know, I turned on Joe Rogan's podcast to do this podcast, guys. So just letting you know.
Hey, It's funny. I've been sending Joe Rogan. Like, look, I'm not hungry for Rogan, right? I don't like to be hungry for anybody. But I sent him a message. Was like, hey, man, I'd love to talk to your audience about preparedness.
Yeah.
You know, I'm writing this book on preparedness, which I'm really excited about. And so I want to get out there and I want to talk about it.
Yeah,
I want to, I actually want to get to like the year out from the book release.
Yeah.
Talk about things, go through the book process, and then and see what happens. So he saw it and then just ignored it. Joe, if you're listening to this, you know, it would be cool, man, if you just,
Trust me, you know. It'd be a good time. It'd be a good conversation.
I think we'd have fun, man.
It'd be a good time.
See, yeah, it'd be fun.
Just let me get in the, just let me be in the waiting room while you're doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Of course. You can hang out with Jamie and get high.
Yeah.
All right, man. I appreciate you.
I appreciate you, Mike.
Where's your tags? Where are your handles at, man?
So I think on Instagram, my name is, let me just look it up.
Come on.
I just, you know, I'm not really into myself.
You
like
have
that.
It tattooed on your
wrist.
It's
George.bell.junior.
George.bell.junior. On Instagram. And what's your OnlyFans account?
OnlyFans is
Big
it's,
Bell.
It's Big Booty Judy. So
Big Bell 69.
Yeah.
All right, man. Hey, I love you. And,
I love you too, man.
Yeah, we'll catch up later.
All right.
All right, peace out.